Ahead of the caucus in Nevada, a new poll shows who's got the support of African-American voters.
I think some candidates are going to start to argue that it's going to be impossible to unite the party against Donald Trump if there is not robust Black support for the eventual Democratic nominee.
And news of a merger pumped up shares of an online bank.
When you can't expand your business, you got to go buy one. So that's what Morgan Stanley did. They went and bought a business.
It's Friday, February 21st. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Sprint and T-Mobile are a step closer to their planned merger after the two wireless carriers agreed on new terms late on Thursday, 2 years after they agreed to an initial deal. Wall Street Journal's telecoms reporter Drew Fitzgerald.
This was a long time coming, and essentially the companies said that they were working on rehashing the deal just because the financial terms should have changed over the past 2 years. Sprint has become a weaker company since they first struck a deal with T-Mobile to merge. T-Mobile has become larger and more attractive to investors. So they were looking for a way to renegotiate the terms to give Sprint and its parent company, SoftBank in Japan, a little less value, and T-Mobile's corporate parent, Deutsche Telekom, a little bit more value.
The revised deal gives T-Mobile 43%, 1% more than before. But Drew says it isn't over the line just yet.
They still have a few more regulatory hurdles to clear with the state utilities regulator in California. They also have a somewhat routine federal district court review separate from the one they just won in New York last week to get through. And that could delay things a little bit further. But the executives of the company say they hope, if everything goes well, to close the deal by April 1st.
The new combined company will have more than 90 million customers and will reshape the U.S. wireless market. This year is shaping up to be another tough one for U.S. farmers. Despite trade deals in North America and between the U.S. and China, prices for corn and soybeans remain low. That's hurting farmers' balance sheets. And the federal government isn't expected to step in with aid like it did last year. On Thursday, the Department of Agriculture said it expects farm debt to rise to a record $425 billion this year. Last year, farm bankruptcies rose 24%. The Indian Health Service has declined to release a report about a sexual abuse case connected to a government pediatrician, Stanley Weber. The report identifies IHS officials who missed warning signs of abuse against Native American boys, punished whistleblowers, and despite their suspicions, transferred Weber from one reservation to another for decades. The IHS says it can't release the findings, citing a law meant to protect medical reviews. But relatives of the pediatrician's victims and some legal experts have questioned the IHS's interpretation of the law. Last week, Weber was sentenced to 5 lifetime prison terms after being convicted of sexually abusing 6 boys on 2 reservations. We report that a global terror finance watchdog agency is set to sanction Iran. The blacklisting by the Paris-based Financial Action Task Force will place financial transactions with Iran under additional scrutiny. It will also escalate pressure on the dwindling number of banks and businesses still dealing with the Islamic Republic to cut their ties. The sanctions mark a step forward in the U.S. effort to compel the Iranian government to end its support for terrorist groups and eliminate its nuclear weapons program. Most Western banks have already severed links with Tehran in response to U.S. sanctions, and European governments have decided to back the Financial Action Task Force in its move to place financial transactions with Iran under additional scrutiny. A new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll offers some worrisome signs for Democratic presidential candidates who are seeking to win support of African-American voters. The group is seen as crucial for Democrats in taking back the White House in November. Joining us with more on the survey is The Wall Street Journal's Josh Jamerson. Josh, what does the survey tell us? What changes have taken place regarding African-American support for the Democratic candidates?
What we've seen in our latest poll is that Joe Biden is no longer the most dominant candidate when it comes to support among Black Democrats. One reason why that's really problematic for him is just that Joe Biden has made his strong African-American support a key argument for why he is the most electable candidate to go against Donald Trump. at one point in the race, Joe Biden was in the lead, but now he's about tied with Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. And one reason why that's so significant is because in 2016, attracting minority support, especially among Black Democrats, was a very big blind spot for Senator Sanders. It's part of the reason why he lost the nomination in 2016 to Hillary Clinton, who was able to keep her support in the Black community very robust, even though her campaign had hit a number of setbacks along the way. So what we're seeing is that this time around, Joe Biden, who came in similarly positioned as Hillary Clinton among Black voters, has not been able to keep that support in place as his campaign has struggled in places like Iowa and New Hampshire.
How are other candidates polling with African Americans?
So in our poll, which was an oversample of African Americans, which we don't often do in our Wall Street Journal NBC poll, we were able to directionally say that there's pretty much three groups among the front runners. It's Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are kind of bunched together, you know, north of 80% of Black Democrats say that they would be comfortable or enthusiastic with their candidacies. And then there's kind of a mid-tier where Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg have majority support among African Americans, but it's quite clearly a different level of support than Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And then there's a tier that's really struggling, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who both have really struggled to gain traction in the primary, I think, for different reasons. I think people close to Senator Klobuchar would argue that she's just not a national figure and she hasn't spent a lot of time courting the African-American vote on a national level. And that same thing would be said for some of Pete Buttigieg's allies, that he's just not a national figure. One thing to counteract that argument, though, is that these two candidates do have higher levels of Black Democrats who express reservations about the candidates. So that means essentially that, sure, fewer people know who they are relative to someone like Joe Biden, who has universal name ID. But some of the people who do know who Amy Klobuchar are and Pete Buttigieg are don't like what they're seeing.
Josh, how important are these polling numbers with primaries and caucuses coming up in more racially diverse states such as Nevada and South Carolina?
So there's two factors here. Just practically, if you're going to have to appeal to a more diverse electorate, how you're standing among non-white voters is kind of essential to the types of delegates you're going to be able to pick up in those states. And that's the practical argument. There's also a narrative argument that could take hold and kind of already has in this primary, which is around electability. I talked to a lot of Democratic primary voters, and the number one thing that they always bring up unprompted is that they can put their personal interests aside if they think a candidate has the best chance of beating Donald Trump. And I think some candidates are going to start to argue that it's going to be impossible to unite the party against Donald Trump if there is not robust Black support for the eventual Democratic nominee. And so I think there's the very practical picking up delegates as we move into these diverse states argument for why you want to have polling show that you can win over these voters. But then I also think there's a very potent narrative argument that could take hold against someone who isn't able to attract support among a key Democratic constituency, such as Black Democrats.
Wall Street Journal reporter Josh Jamerson. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thanks.
On to markets. Wall Street gave a thumbs up to a financial merger this week. We get more from the Wall Street Journal's Paul Vigna.
Big winner this week was E-Trade. E-Trade on Thursday announces this $13 billion merger with Morgan Stanley. E-Trade shares rose as much as 27% during the session. what this really kind of shows is that as much as you see the stock indexes keep rising, keep setting records, the industry of selling stocks is not particularly growing. So Wall Street firms, when you can't expand your business, you got to go buy one. So that's what Morgan Stanley did. They went and bought a business. This gets them closer to retail traders. It gives them a leg up there. It gives them something they didn't necessarily have before. And it's going to be interesting to see how their competitors respond to that, because there aren't that many trades out there to buy.
So what companies saw their stocks get dinged this week?
So the losers this week, the ones we thought were the most interesting, were retailers. Two in particular. Walmart, which reported weak holiday sales. And it's interesting because even though Walmart has this online component now, like everyone does, and the online component did well, they still are showing that they are struggling in the brick and mortar area, in the real area. And the other one was Pier 1 Imports. I mean, if you've grown up, you've known Pier 1 forever, right? They sold wicker chairs and weird, you know, elephant-themed umbrella holders and all kinds of oddity, home furnishing oddities. Well, they finally decided that they just can't keep the business going. The world is changing. Pier 1 didn't keep up. They declared for bankruptcy protection, and they are going to try to sell the company off either in whole or in parts.
And here's what else we're watching. A new travel ban by the Trump administration goes into effect Friday. The ban suspends U.S. entry for immigrants from Myanmar, Eritrea, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, Sudan, and Tanzania. There are already seven nations under travel restrictions, many of which are majority Muslim countries. Farm equipment maker Deere & Company is reporting its quarterly earnings before the bell, and the National Association of Realtors releases a report on existing home sales for the month of January. And finally, Burger King has a new item it's advertising, the Moldy Whopper. Sounds shocking? CMO Today reporter Suhail Patel says it's meant to.
So they're actually showing these very attention-grabbing Moldy Whopper images to kind of demonstrate that this is no longer having any kind of artificial aspects to it. It's supposed to make you stop and just see, what the hell is this? You always run the risk when you do a stunt like this, you know, that this might make people think negatively of Burger King's products. But at least for Burger King, which has been known to do interesting eye-grabbing stunts before, this is a risk worth taking.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.